Blog Talk Radio.
This is Professor Applewhite, Danita Applewhite, and I'm on here live on the Student to Teacher radio show this morning and just enjoying every single minute of my life and the joy that it brings just to wake up in the morning, especially this particular morning, and share with the listeners of the Student to Teacher radio show a very special guest this morning. We have Mitch Noble that will be joining us today to discuss a very important topic that we've been looking at for quite a while here at White Apple Institute, the sponsor of our show. We've been looking at students and violence. As a matter of fact, my dissertation is focused on understanding violence and students. You see, much of the violence that we're dealing with and experiencing in schools is blamed usually on students diagnosed with a mental disorder. And what I would like to see, this is my goal, I would like to see less emphasis on students diagnosed with mental illness or mental disorder and placed more on the factor that society has a responsibility for the exposure to violence in early childhood. And so I have a number of things that I want to share with you. There's been a lot of experiments done, early childhood experiments on how children react to violence and how we can counteract some of the exposure that they're getting from being involved in violence. And so one of the things that's real important that we must remember is that everyone has a certain amount of responsibility, okay? Everyone in our society has a responsibility to help students succeed, to help us reduce violence in our schools, and also to be practical about how much violence is really there. Recently, I came across an article in Psychology Today that really reflects, I believe it picks up my thought patterns very well. It's by Dr. Noam Spencer. He's a practicing clinical psychologist. And he brings out that since the Virginia Tech massacres and the even from Columbine, going way back to Columbine, and to today's the issues that happened at the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, even though that wasn't on an actual college campus, the student that was linked to the massacre that happened at the theater was a graduate student who had been using the mental health services on the campus, a local campus. And so we still see the link there, and of course, again, with mental health services, again, with identifying students with depression and anxiety disorders. And so what I'd like to do is look at fear factors. And I asked our therapist, Midge Noble, to join us because she is a child and family therapist to discuss ways that we can address what's going on with the exposure to violence in our society and whether or not we do have a chance to counteract that. And so without further ado, I'd like to bring on Dr. Therapist Mitch Noble onto our show this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing fine. So, I appreciate you having me on, Professor Applewhite. I'm just delighted to always speak about how we can help our children to grow up loving and compassionately and well. And I totally agree with you that a lot of the diagnoses that we look at in children, they meet the clinical symptomology. But I also agree that there are times that the culture and the exposure that our children are living in has absolutely 100% to do with how they grow up and what presents in their lifetime.
Yes. And as a child family therapist in your practice, do you come across students that have violent tendencies?
Absolutely. And actually, I have seen, I've been doing this work since 1985, and I've done it as a school counselor. I've worked with terminally ill children, and I worked with mental health for 8 years, and now I'm in a private practice. And I have increasingly seen the number of very rageful and violent kids increase over all those years. It is more prevalent, and the violence that I see is so much more dangerous now than it ever was. It's more than just you have this little defiant kid. I mean, we're talking about, the incidences of using weapons and the lack of remorse and connectedness that our kids are having today to how they affect other people.
Right. That does make a difference. Okay. That does
And
make a difference.
part of what I think is happening is that, like you said earlier, the exposure to the violence has increased. And I read an article from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and they did a study. And they said that between the ages of 2 and 18 years of age, our children are watching about 3 hours of TV a day, which threw me for a loop because that's on average. But when kids are in school for almost all of their day, and they may go to after school and they may have activities, but on average, our kids are still logging in 3 hours. So it
Three
makes you
hours,
wonder.
and that's even with all of the games that they have now, all of the Xbox games and all of those things.
Yeah, right. And so if they're watching 3 hours a day, then they are being bombarded with the images. And they said in the article that most of the children's television shows are more violent than any of the adult shows that are on television, which is kind of hard for me to believe too. But they said that the cartoons, they rated the cartoons, and for just a regular cartoon, the children are exposed to 20 acts of violence per hour. 20
What is
acts
that
of
again?
violence.
Say that again for our listeners.
For cartoons, children are exposed to 20 acts of violence per hour.
Wow.
By the age of 18, our kids have seen 16,000 simulated murders and 200,000 acts of violence.
Wow.
So it has been clearly documented that TV violence affects school performance, it affects a person's sexuality, their body image, their self-image, and it also leads to increased aggression and sometimes substance abuse. Because kids become desensitized to the violence. The video games that kids are playing now are a huge problem with
Yes.
kids, and even into adults reacting violently. That's also been documented that the exposure to the violent electronic media has a larger effect on the public than cigarette smoking has on lung cancer.
Oh my goodness. Now that's a
I
tremendous
know.
statistic.
I
Tremendous.
know.
I mean, some of the characteristics that have been brought out as that validates what you're saying is that these students that have violent tendencies usually have less support from their parents or caring adults, little or no supervision.
Well, exactly.
And so that's where the social responsibility comes in too. It's not just society. When I say societal responsibility, I mean the parents too, The parents have to get more involved in monitoring what's going on the television and what's going on in their children's lives.
Absolutely.
And we live in such a society that's mm-hmm. very hard to integrate. And I'm sure you found that in your practice.
It is hard because, and I have found that in the practice, because there are several variables. And, you know, I love the parents that I work with, and I believe that there are a lot of good people, you know, on our planet and a lot of good people raising kids. I also know that there is a reason why parents have to work two jobs. And I know
mm-hmm.
that things are tight and have gotten increasingly tighter. But, you know, my concern is that the amount of time that children spend with their parents is so limited that it really affects the bond that they have with their family. I know children love their family, but they're being raised predominantly by school and daycare and babysitters and coaches and not really the family. And
mm-hmm.
I see so much violence within the family system. I mean, it's like brothers and sisters don't care about each other, and parents don't seem to have a relationship sometimes with their kids, and the kids are disrespecting the parents. And, you know, the shows that the kids are watching are such sassy-mouthed little kid shows. I mean, they're putting down the parents. The parents are looking like, you know, buffoons. The
mm-hmm.
kids are, you know, just smart-mouthed, and everybody thinks that's so hysterical. And I see kids coming into my office quoting some of these shows and talking to their parents like they're talking like to another kid. And I bet
yes.
if I say it one time, I say it 20 times a day, not in my office will you talk to your parent with that tone of voice.
Ooh,
no, you
great.
Will not. Because I call them out on it, and I also talk with the parents privately about, here is what I'm observing. Your child does not respect the breath that you breathe, because when you're speaking, they're running all over top of you, and you will turn
mm-hmm.
and speak to them. Instead of telling them, wait a minute, the parent
mm-hmm.
just gives up the power. So even
right.
within the family system, the parents are unwittingly, I mean, they're not doing it consciously, but they are giving the children the inappropriate power. They're being talked
mm-hmm.
down to. The children are controlling the situation instead of the parents providing them with appropriate boundaries. So when you talk
yes,
about
very abusive,
all of the,
very abusive language they use,
yes,
cursing,
yes,
the things,
yes.
and extremely violent gestures.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, and that one show, I don't even know, I don't watch the video games and I don't play them. And I really, even as an adult, I have limited my contact with any violent contact. I try not to watch too much news. I watch what I think I need to see, but I've really limited that because I saw in my own world that even though, you know, I'm older, I'm 53, so, you know, I've come through my developmental periods, and it doesn't affect me on the level that it might a child. But I also felt, you know, that it was kind of clogging up my energy level, and it was keeping me from being the complete compassionate person that I could be, because those images resonate with you. You know, when you see horrible things like Criminal Minds and some of these shows that are just so sadistically violent. I mean,
right.
I was afraid to take my own dogs out, you know, to go to the bathroom at night. I mean,
I can understand. You see, and that's important for you to share and for me to share with the people that we work with, is that we are even affected by that.
Yes.
You know, with all
yes.
our so-called knowledge and degrees and experiences, we're still affected by the violence that we see or experience around our world. And so it's
right.
real important that if we're experiencing it, that parents and just people, period, just look at what they're exposed to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the students I work with, Midge, are adult college students. Normally,
mm-hmm.
You know, 17, 18 plus. And still, some of them have children that are listening to us right now, that they have children that they're raising. And so all of this information that you're sharing is so, so vital. So thank you so much for what you're bringing to the table here. I have a question for you. One of the things that's real important to me is the susceptibility for anxiety disorders or PTSD because of the childhood experiences, the exposure to violence. Where do you find, a correlation in that?
I think the correlation has to do, because PTSD is about the anxiety and it's about, you know, some sort of an exposure. And what happens is once a child is exposed to something that's traumatic, whether it's a repeated event in their life that they're exposed to, like domestic violence or, you know, some sort of a community violence situation where if they walk out of their house, they may or may not get shot. You know, that's like an ongoing, everyday kind of anxiety that can create PTSD. But what you also talked about was like the Columbines and Virginia Tech. You know, that's a one-shot thing that happened, but it resonates sometimes for the rest of someone's life because of, you know, because of that trauma. And what I have found is that the people who make it out of those things and don't carry the PTSD for the rest of their lives are the ones that can, one, have support, and they feel like they have a community of support, and they are also able to reframe what happened and use the positive part of their brain to reframe it and also to refocus on what's really happening. So they sort of boss back the fear instead of continuing to live it. The more, you know, they sit in the trauma and re-experience it, the harder it is for them to take control over their own circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is vital for people to be focused on wellness and compassion and not continue to see everybody as, you know, a perpetrator, but go back to remembering that this was one event or this was one person or this was one thing that happened in my life. But in looking at my entire life up to that point, this was not a part of my existence.
Right. Very, very important. It's not, and you know, when we talk about, you know, everybody's today, PTSD is always now associated with the military, with veterans. And as a veteran myself, when we try to pull veterans onto the show to discuss certain things, it's not PTSD, and for those listeners that are not aware of what we're talking about, it's when you have a post-traumatic stress disorder and you are dealing with something that happened in your past, something very traumatic or violent event that has happened, and it continues, as Mitch was saying, it continues over and over and over again in your life. And it's almost like, this is how I see it, it's almost like you're replaying, you're hitting the replay button continuously on a tape recorder. And
right.
You have control over the issue of whether or not you're going to hit the replay button and rewind, or whether you're going to push the play button and be in the present moment. So
I love that.
That's a choice you have. Okay? And so I really hope that with what you're bringing, the insight that you're bringing to us will help us to look in the mirror at ourselves and really determine whether or not we are hitting the rewind button over and over again and to developing more frustration about what we've seen and what we've experienced in our life. If you have experienced a lot of violence and been involved with domestic violence as a child, it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to have a post-traumatic experience later on in adulthood, right?
That's
have control over
right.
that, right, Mitch?
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you said that about the rewind and the play. And then what we need to challenge ourselves to do is that when we hit that play button, then we are in control of what we focus our mind on. So at any moment, you know, we can choose to stay in the victimology of what has happened, or we can choose to rise up and out of that and say, okay, this is something that's in my past, and I choose not to carry it forward. And in my present, I will focus on what's going right, I will focus on love and compassion, and I will, you know, continue to move forward on that path. So it's almost like when something traumatic has happened, you're at a fork in the road, and you get to decide, am I going to go backwards and stay hanging on to the stuff that's happened, or what path will I choose next? And we get to decide that. And so what we do is, instead of just saying, okay, I'm gonna move forward, we have to have intention. What are we moving forward to, and how will we get there? So maybe instead of watching the violent programs, I'm going to introduce an evening meditation. I'm going to listen to positive, uplifting programs. You know, I'm going to read some spiritual literature. I'm going to go volunteer for someone and get up out of myself and provide comfort and care to somebody else. So mm-hmm. you have to go forward with a plan, or you won't know where you're going or when you get there. So once we go
parents
through
need to be more aware of the fact that we are role models, and
mm-hmm.
our children are looking at us. So we can all day long we can say, you know, you need to do this, you need to meditate, you need to find things that are going to help you relax and get away from violent television shows or whatever. But, you know, the response is going to be, but that's boring, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if they're watching you and you're enjoying it yourself, then they're going to be more prone to follow the example that you're putting in front of them. And that goes way, way back to Albert Bandura's experiment. I think that was in the 50s or 60s, where he used a doll, an adult going in a room and beating up a doll, and then brought in children to see if the children would react in the same way that they saw the adult react. And it was more violent. Right. And so I wanted to see if you had a little bit more time. We have about 10 minutes left on the show. To ask some of the listeners that are on right now whether they have any questions for you or any comments. I know we have one that's been hanging on for quite a while here, and
okay.
it's 216 number. Okay.
Oh,
are
you
there, 216?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi.
Okay.
Hi. Yes, I'd just like to just add to it about the you have to be an example for your children, because I'm in my late 20s, and when I was growing up, it was more do as I say, not as I do. But now you have to show them the way.
Yes, I think it's vital, and I call this face time. You know, we are so busy as adults and in our life today that a lot of times it's easier for us to, you know, put the kids in front of a television or a video game so that we can get supper on, so that we can, you know, get our housework done. But I'm telling you clearly that when your kids are able to have FaceTime with you, when you model for them, you know, family game night, or when you model for them that we're going to make cookies together, or we're going to put this puzzle together, and I enjoy speaking to you and listening to you and spending time with you, then they start to see value out of your eyes coming to them. It increases their self-esteem and their connectedness.
Exactly, because like those times when you don't have time, you regret the time that you missed.
Oh, absolutely. And kids grow up so fast, and there's such a small window of time for you to be able to, you know, interact with them on the level that's, you know, just so loving. And you know, once they're out and they're in their own little world, you know, you're done. You know, you've either built the relationship from the womb up or you haven't.
And I totally agree with that, because, like, I see some parents that they let their children do whatever it is, and then when they're teenagers, they try to be a parent. And it's kind of too late, because, like, it's a shock to the system to the child.
Oh yeah. Because at that point they're in the developmental phase of breaking away anyway. So you compound that with all of a sudden trying to be the sergeant of arms, and of course you're going to get a major power struggle going, and it's going to break the relationship. Not that they can't mend it later once the child, you know, grows up and realizes some stuff, but you know, in that moment, it's going to be horrific, and it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't have to be that way.
Exactly. Like if you're there being a parent from the beginning, it won't be a shock to their system once they're at that teenage level.
Right. Right.
Thank you very much, caller, and you're calling in from the, it looks like, the Ohio area. Thank you so much for joining us
this morning.
And, Midge, I really appreciate what you said there. The question was really great,
yes.
The emphasis on the younger parent, because that's exactly the type of student that I'm dealing with now, is the student that comes into my classroom at 25 to 30 years old trying to finish a college degree, and they have someone that's a 10-year-old, 11-year-old child at home who's quickly approaching puberty, or already in puberty. As a matter of fact, studies are showing now that children are reaching puberty at 10 years old, and it's incredible. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary.
Yes, it is. We have another caller. A caller is a 480. Do you have any questions, comments? We have a 623 number, 377. Good morning.
Good morning, Nazim Rashid here.
Hi, Nazim.
How are you doing?
I'm so glad you joined us this morning for a comment. Appreciate you. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen too much to the show, but we've had some very interesting comments about violent tendencies and how it affects students in today's world. And I just thought maybe you would have something more to say on that.
Yes, I heard it. It was a very good show. And I wanted to know, I know right now you don't have much time, but I think it should be a part two to this, because what comes to my mind is the whole idea of emotional bullying within the household. Now, that's one thing that wasn't covered, but that's a very, very key thing. It happens all the time. Emotional bullying within the household. You have siblings, or you might have other relatives that are kind of persecuting kids, you know, within the household. Not physically, but just berating and a lot of other comments, making the person feel like they want to just commit suicide.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's great.
Cool. Yes, go ahead, Mitch.
I was just going to say that's a great point, Nassim. And you know, I know that you know, when we talk to parents, we have two sets of parents, one that are open and receptive and want to change for the betterment of their children, and others that, you know, were raised in a negative situation and dysfunctional systems, and they're not providing what they need to provide for their kids, and they don't know how. You know, they're already, you know, they've grown up not having the compassion or the wellness, and they were bullied as children, and they're passing that on to their kids. And it's tough to break the cycle when you don't have parents that are, like, open to seeing what they can change, or they're not maybe willing to change it. But that does affect children. You know, if I can't even trust my parents to love me, I'm not going to love anybody else.
Right.
You know,
well, no one else will love me.
Yeah,
I mean, my parents are not loving me, so that means, you know, I can respond with cruelty. I mean, they've seen studies, cruelty to animals has been expressed.
Yeah.
The student himself becomes violent towards others and bullying others because of what they're feeling at home.
Yeah,
very good point. And I would like to carry this into another Saturday session. That would be a good idea. And if you both are willing to come on the show next Saturday and join, I would really appreciate that. We're running into a three minutes left on the show, and I'd like to ask Midge to kind of wrap this up with whether or not we feel that, because there's that article in Psychology Today, and Dr. Spencer is saying that mental health is not necessarily an identifier for violent behavior. And I definitely feel that it's important for us to acknowledge that every student that is diagnosed with depression or anxiety is not necessarily a violent individual.
Absolutely not. You know, violence comes from the self-hatred from within out. And so just because you're depressed does not mean that, one, you hate yourself or that you want to act that out on other people. You know, it really does come from your lack of self-love. If you have love in your heart and compassion, you can't also harbor hatred because they don't reside in the same place. So if you have active hatred for yourself, then that's all you have to give. But if you can fill yourself with compassion and life and love, even if you may feel depressed or there may be some other kind of thing that's going on in your life, you're not going to be violent.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. And Nazim Rashid's book, Reconnected, is available on Amazon. And Midge, what is the title of your book that you'd like us to pick up that would reinforce some of these concepts?
Well, I have a book called Ice Cube Award, Learning to Be Cool Under Pressure. And it's a children's book that talks about bullying and learning to love and approve of yourself and stay in control of your own emotions. And you can go to my website, MidgeNobleSecondChances.com, and you can find both of my books. And I thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Thank you, Nazim Rashid, for us this morning. And hopefully we'll hear from you again next week as we continue banning student violence. We close our show with Westwood.